Everyone, it's Mark. Thanks for joining me today. This is episode 4 of my podcast miniseries, Charles Gassenheimer's Lies. I'm expecting this series to go 6 episodes, although it is possible that it ends up going 7. But after that, I'll have gotten to everything that I'm hoping to share with you guys. Before we get back into it, you may recall we were going through the original podcast episode that I recorded with Charles Gassenheimer and just sort of sharing my feelings as you were all getting to meet him, which was, of course, the original plan of the podcast. Anyway, before I get back into it, I wanted to share something with you. One of the questions that I get pretty frequently is this one here. Pan, go ahead and put that picture up. And that is, how do I come up with the numbers that I write about or speak about in my podcasts and blogs? And so I thought it might be interesting to see a little bit about how I go about the business of estimating. And so let's just go through that really quickly. Who are the various claimants of the Kelly Moore, Charles Gassenheimer situation? Well, first off, there's the landlords. And go ahead and put picture number one up here, Pan. You could see on an average, I've gotten quite a few of these. But in all cases, they're in the $50,000, $60,000 range each. Some of them have been a little bit lower than that. Some of them have been a good bit higher. And so he's got 157 of those, $50,000 each. Do the math. That's $8 million right there. He owes Paint Care some amount of money. It's hard to exactly estimate how much that is. Paint Care in California is about $1 or $1.10 a gallon, I'm sure, somewhere around there. And from my understanding, he did not pay the Paint Care fee to the California entity for an extended period of time. And so it's hard to do the math on that. I don't know exactly how much their paint that they were making was sold in California versus Texas, where they had a very big presence, or Oklahoma, where they might have had less of a presence. I'm estimating the Paint Care here at around $2 million. In fact, it could be much more. That must have pissed off the chairman of the board of the American Coatings Association. That's the owner of Paint Care. He did not want to see one of his members, and in fact, one of his largest members, stiff the California organization like that. Be curious what he has to say about it. Of course, I have no means of reaching him. In addition to that, there's the vendors, and I'm going to break those down into a couple of different categories. I wrote about Lancaster, and there were other vendors that had products in the store. The Lancaster was $2 million. Just to quickly estimate the other vendors at another $2 million, and so that's $4 million for claims against what was in the store from those type of vendors. But what about the manufacturing vendors, the cans, the labels, the raw materials, the resins, the titanium, all of that? I'm aware that they hadn't been making any paint since July. And so those debts to the vendors are probably a little bit older than some of the Kelly Moore vendors, but they're also probably a lot bigger. And so let's just go through that a little bit. Kelly Moore was doing at the end somewhere in the neighborhood of $25, $30 million a month in sales. And if that's the case, somewhere between 20 and 25 million of that was coating sales based on norms, as we all understand them in terms of percentages of sales in paint stores, sundry to liquid coatings. So I'll estimate the coatings piece of that at around $15 million. And then, of course, the manufacturing costs of that were a good bit lower. Let's call that $5 million. And if any of my manufacturing friends who I know are listening now care to shoot me a text and tell me how I did, if there's a way to tighten that number up, make it better, I'll be happy to use that in whatever I put out upcoming. But I'll estimate that in $5 million a month to support those sales. That's in the raws, like I said, the raws, the cans, and any other part of the manufacturing process. And we're aware, because of the circumstances, we're aware that none of that, for the minimally, the last 90 days worth had been paid. And so that's $15 million. And that's starting to form the foundation of numbers that I would use in the blog. I will tell you here, I am starting to think personally that that number is going to be a lot closer to 25 million. So let's go through what we just laid out there quickly. And remember that we're still missing categories of victims here, right? We didn't talk about the employees. I know that many got paid at the end. I do know that there are many claims against the company as well. And so I'm just staying away from that completely, but I'm aware that it's there. And so Real quick, let's go through those totals. You got $15 million for the raw materials. You got $4 million for Lancaster and the other in-store vendors. That's $19 million. $2 million for paint care is $21 million. $8 million for the landlords is $29 million. And that's using only the most ultra-conservative estimates. In fact, I think that when they do the final accounting of this, which there will be a final accounting at some point, obviously, this is all going to be in court and drag on for years. When I think all the claimants come in, I suspect that number is going to be closer to 40, maybe even $50 million just from what we've described here. But in fact, I think the dollar amount is the total dollar amount is even going to be higher. There's another liability, which I believe exists. And so that's the total amount of the claims that I think are likely to come this way. But it's not just the outstanding claims where there are serious questions about what happened to Kelly Moore. Because we know that when Gassenheimer and the Flax Group bought Kelly Moore and took over the company in October of 2022, that Kelly Moore was an efficient operator at that time, that they had high gross margins. And then they operated the company for 14 months, doing in the neighborhood of $25, $30 million any one of those months. Where did that money go? A year of operation would have generated an estimated $15 million in free cash flow. That money that would have been available to pay some of those vendors, where did that money go? And so there's that $15 million. That's if he had done proper accounting. But we know that that is not what's going to be the outcome here is a proper accounting. So let's look at it through the lens of an improper accounting, which is to say that they owned the company for a year and that operating properly and efficiently, to our knowledge and understanding, they would have turned out $15 million. But in fact, what really happened is that probably the last 3 months of the company's operation, they did not pay out any money, with the exception of to the employees. And so I'm thinking at that point, the shelves were starting to get a little lower. So probably that $30 million, $25 million was probably starting to drop, but it wasn't down to pennies. And all of the money that they were collecting while those stores were open and while they knew they were winding them down, and all of the money that they were collecting after the stores were closed, while the organization continued to function and, to my knowledge, continues to function, all of that money that they were collecting that's outstanding, that has to equal $100 million or more, right? That's been going on for 3, 4, 5 months with their knowledge of what their plans are, minimally, if they didn't know this as their plan from the beginning. But minimally, for the last 3 months, they did all of that revenue with no expense. And so his registers rang up that money. That money should be available to claimants. And I think the law ultimately is going to make that money available to claimants, because I think that you're not allowed to hide that money. Anybody who's considering a claim against Kelly Moore, who read the company's release about an orderly wind down, that the company has no assets, that you were misled. You should look at the title of this podcast. You've been misled. There is money available. I estimate, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to maybe even as high as $150 million, just as you run through it, as we have just in these few minutes together today, if you were to do a proper accounting. And that's more than enough, in my opinion, to cover every outstanding claim that there would be against Kelly Moore. And if you've come this far, then you know about the letter from Senator Elizabeth Warren regarding Corizon, and what she's alleging in that letter is exactly what's looking like is about to start happen here when it comes to Kelly Moore. We're going to put all the victims in one pile, and we're going to put all the assets in another. And that's the Texas two-step that Senator Warren is speaking to as it relates to Corizon, and that I think is probably coming here as it relates to Kelly Moore. We're going to see. But at Kelly Moore, the victims are going to be people who are harmed financially by the lies of Charles Gassenheimer. At Kelly Moore, it's going to be the employees who lost their job or lost their status as a senior employee that found themselves after 20 years taking lower paying work, employees that had expenses that were not reimbursed before the company went, before the company closed. There are vendors, there are agencies. I talked about paint care, and all of that's horrible, but it's a different sort of victimization than the victimization that's going on at Corizon. And so before we get into the next episode, I just want to take 2 more minutes and talk about what I know about some of the victims at Corizon. Meet Daryl Becton. On September 29th of 2020, Daryl died. Daryl died in the Arlington County Detention Center in Arlington, Virginia, after he was left unattended and had several serious medical conditions go untreated by the Corizon staff who was contracted with to provide care. The CEO at the time, Pan, go ahead and put picture 4 up, is one and only Charles Gassenheimer. At the time, the company was called PharmaCor. That's a predecessor of Corizon and now part of this Texas two-step that Senator Warren is alleging. But in February of 2023, Charles Gassenheimer was on my show. You saw that in the last episode, talking about how fantastic things were going at Corizon. Days before or after, he was settling this case for $1.3 million, which of course we don't know if Daryl's estate is going to get paid any of that money at this point. But it's interesting to me when I think about what Gassenheimer said about Corizon and what he's said about Corizon in his email exchange with me, which I've had up on my blog previously. You can go back and find that back in January if you want, where he talks about Corizon, as he does here in this episode, as a success, because apparently they made money, which I guess, you know, listen, if you're collecting premiums to dispense medical care and not dispensing that care, and you have no regard for the outcome of that, then yes, I suspect you'd make a fucking fortune. I don't know, Charles, if you think you figured out some sort of hack or something that makes you smarter than everybody else. But yeah, we all know that we can do that, Charles. It's our ethics that stops us from doing that. And so what is it that you don't have that? Because it's my opinion that only the really depraved are willing to hurt people for money. And further, it's my opinion that you're a special type of depraved if you're willing to hurt people for money that cannot defend themselves, that cannot speak for themselves. And then I don't think I have to go any further to say what I think about the actions of then, after settling, trying not to pay that money to these claimants in the facility where Daryl died. There are 7 other wrongful death claims. Let's get back into the episode of Charles Gassenheimer's lies. Right when we ended the last episode, I'm going to queue up in just that spot. You may remember Gassenheimer had just started speaking about the relationship between Benjamin Moore and their retailers and using industry dog whistles to point to that relationship. And what came next were just statements of offense from the Kelly Moore chief executive.
If you have some sort of customization that you need, we're interested in talking to you. We have a world-class innovation and R&D center in our plant in Hearst, Texas. So even though we're only a mid-sized player compared to some of the other major players, right, we view that as an advantage. We have all of the world-class facilities from a manufacturing innovation and R&D that the majors have, but we're also nimble and we also want to be super aggressive. And so I think we provide a pretty attractive alternative to those who might be let's say, a little worn out and tired from some of the other players in this channel who might be more restrictive.
And
so he went back for it.
You know, it's not even so much, I find anyway, the opportunity that we're talking about is not even for dealers that are worn out and tired. But the independent channel itself at cost, the purchasing has probably come close to doubling, maybe increasing as much as $1 billion, you know, all inclusive of everything, not just paint, in the last 3 or 4 years, perhaps 500, 600, 700 million of that is paint. And so independent retailers need suppliers for that, right? That's a lot of material all of a sudden to just get from the existing supply chain.
And so I wanted to get him back on track. I like to think I do that with all of my guests, but I remember thinking, here, I want to get him back on track so that we had enough recording to be able to do what I knew that they were about to pay me to do, because I knew I had to cut that part out, right? Because that's my name, even though he's going to be speaking it, that's my name. And I just didn't care to stand next to a fence like that.
No question that, you know, we see the same numbers you do. We see the growth. Look, I can't imagine this is a surprise, because most of your listeners are very well educated in the coatings industry, but you know, I'm learning it, so I can share with you some of my learnings with fresh eyes. And you know, we see, you know, the big box retailer certainly is a growth area, but we see people.
So the reason I'm stopping so often is I want to share with you what I'm thinking at that time. And so to do that, I need to stop and give you a little bit of context. At this moment, now we're 9 minutes and 4 seconds into this. At this moment, when he made that comment, that was probably the first time I thought to myself, oh, wow, he's really completely ignorant to what's going on in the market. Now, it's interesting because the follow-up thought to that was, I can make money off of that. That's how I'm going to invoice him for what he's just agreed to pay me, is to fix some of that so that he doesn't say things accidentally that are factually wrong, so that the experts in paint that are about to be around him, the quality employees of Kelly Moore who are in their various positions around him now, so that he wouldn't sound like an idiot. I was hoping at this point, I would be able to tell him, you know, on a subsequent call, hey, I can help you fix that. Because here's the thing. The big boxes are a disaster as far as selling paint goes. They're not selling any. That's why the independents, one of the reasons anyway, why the independents have been doing so well over the last number of years. And the manufacturers who are making the paint for them are not making any money doing it. And so he should have known that. He was the chief executive of, you know, the 10th largest, whatever, paint manufacturer in the United States. So he should have known that. But he didn't, because he's an idiot, you know? And the thing is, like, there's times, he's a special type, though, because there's times when I don't know. Right. I understand in this case, I'm going to know out every time he's wrong because I'm the expert. There's times I'm not the expert. There's circumstances in my life when I'm not the expert. In fact, it happens all the time to all of us. But right, it happens all the time. What do you do in that circumstance? You shut your fucking mouth. You don't profess to and speak to expertise that you don't have. And so already, like I said, red flag in that I noticed the behavior, but I probably wasn't thinking get out yet. I was probably thinking get rich quick.
Still want to have the user experience of being able to walk into the store and get that extra customer service that you would need. And you know, I can't imagine that anybody on your program has consumers that have just been completely satisfied with that big box approach. And so while we see that as
word soup,
a growing channel, that's not an area that we plan to take Kelly Moore. We want to continue with the two key tenets of.
By the way, if you want evidence that what I said about the condition of the home center channel, at least as far as paint's concerned, I don't really follow it as far as the rest of their businesses go. What's going on in the home center channel as far as paint's concerned, we all saw that notice from PPG. Charles, I got bad news for you. PPG is not walking away from $1.5 billion or whatever the heck that said, $1.5 billion worth of business because, you know, there's opportunity there. They're walking away because they want somebody to take it off their hands, right? They're not making any money. Word soup.
Kelly Moore, which are quality and service. And we'd like to work with dealers who share our enthusiasm for being able to provide that high touch customer service.
And so how do you plan on reaching dealers, obviously other than coming on my show? How do you plan on reaching, sorry, I got to get the plug in there a little bit anyway.
Of course.
How do you plan on reaching dealers and letting them know that you have programs that are available for them? Because a year ago, that didn't exist.
Yeah, thank you. So obviously, thank you to Mark for having me on. I think.
The plan would have been, and I may go into some of the emails that I traded with him and look and see if I want to show what the details were. I'm not really sure that I want to do that because I know that there were some other even entities involved and so I'm probably not going to get into that. But the plan would have been to record this and then through the course of my blog primarily, there would have been, let's say, a month between this recording and it being aired. And that month would have given me, or however long I felt I needed, it might have been longer than a month at that time. I don't remember. But so that would have given me whatever time I needed to write about it, write to you and say, I'm working for this guy. Here we go. So I would have said what the deal was. And then these podcasts were going to start showing up. And so that was the plan. And so that's why we were having the chuckle here. That's your inside baseball on this one, right? Is that, you know, we knew that this was coming at this point.
As we start to think about segmentation and channel marketing, right? I think the answer comes down to some very key basic tenets. I think you'll see us in more of the trade shows coming up over the coming 12 to 18 months. You'll see us have more of a, I think you'll see us have more of a presence in terms of our branding and our social media presence, right? I think you'll see that we're planning to do more in terms of hosting folks who want to come in and do plant tours, who want to come in and meet us and have a conversation. And I think these are all things that we're accessible with in terms of trying to provide that and demonstrate that we want to go the extra mile for our dealer channel. And without overstepping my bounds on this call, Mark, I can tell you that we're...
And so we thought the plant tours, when I say we, when I negotiated the deal, it was with executives of the company, and I've been responsible for doing things like this before and felt confident in my ability to do it based on what they were asking me to do, which I don't recall the specifics in terms of numbers and stuff. I felt confident in my ability to deliver that. And so that was sort of the foundation of some of the work that I was going to be doing for them, this podcast and others like it with other people throughout the company, and perhaps he even mentioned that other person's name because he was planning on putting him on this podcast at some point, because I know he mentioned he was in the dealer part of the business.
We're already having meaningful conversations with a number of major players.
That was a lie. Now that I'm hearing this again And I mentioned earlier, I have not gotten to, this is now a virgin territory for me, just the first time a year ago, and I haven't listened to it since then. That was untrue, that they were having serious negotiations with major players. I don't know why he said that, knowing that I would know that that was not true. Why would he say that, knowing that I knew that that was not true? And so it's possible that this is where I'm starting to think we've got a problem, because this podcast that you're watching here is the end of a process. I did not sit down and say, what do you think, Charles? Let's do a recording. There was a plan that had been developed from my checking of the calendar. I think I published this in a blog a couple months ago. This is, over about a 4 or 6 week period, as I recall. And over that 4 or 6 weeks, we had developed a plan that we were planning on executing. And during that time, I had been informing much of their thinking of the channel and opportunity through their representatives. I was intimately involved with enough people to know that that information, that statement, was a lie. But the part that fascinates me is he must have known that. He's the CEO at the head of this organization. This process happened underneath him, and he knew that where he was at was not where he just said. But he said it anyway. And that's why the title of this podcast is the title of this podcast.
Who really want to represent Kelly Moore. And I think that that is just fantastic.
Well, good for you. Good luck. I hope that this continues to work out well for you. I think, as I shared with you when we did the prep for this, I think independent retailers need paint right now. And so as far as I'm concerned, anybody who steps up and says we can make it, we can fill need, I think is going to fill a lot of need for a lot of independent retailers. They're all, very nervous. We've been through a lot the last couple of years as far as supply goes. And yeah. So I'm sorry, keep
let
going.
Let me make a comment on that, because look, I think it's interesting. I think that, we studied the same numbers that everyone else did. Certainly 2021 and coming into 22, the global supply chain issues that caused some of our key raw materials to be in short supply. We ended up making paint for others, candidly, other than majors, if you can imagine, tolling agreements. So we had
if you can imagine. So at that point, Charles would have spent, 2 months with the company, 3 months with the company. And in that 3 months, that's 90 days, he didn't work more than half of them in a plant in Texas. And so at the time that he said to me, can you imagine a paint manufacturer making paint for another paint manufacturer? Can you imagine? He's toured at most a paint manufacturing facility 30 times, which, if you can imagine, is less times than I've toured a paint manufacturing facility. And so instantly I knew what I'm about to share with you now as what I believe to be, generally speaking, common knowledge. Certainly common knowledge in the circles that I travel in. and not common knowledge that the people in the circles that I travel in would consider to be secret. There are some paint manufacturers who, for their own reasons, decide not to toll manufacture for other companies. I've had conversations over the course of my career with executives that, you know, feel that way. And, you know, there's lots of good reasons why companies would want to do that. That said, I don't have a stat, so I wouldn't quote one here, but a very, very large number of paint manufacturers toll for other paint manufacturers. In fact, it's not uncommon in the slightest, Charles. Right? And so I don't know how many of plant tours I've actually been on, more than 30. And I would say that the practice, from my experiences, would have to be considered common. And so for sure now we are 12 and a half. So we're halfway through this. I pointed out several red flags along the way. I can't remember them to mention now because I've been smoking weed all afternoon. But now on top of that, he's creating a story of his own greatness and has no clue at all that I know of its absurdity. And so he doesn't know that I'm already thinking all those red flags that I mentioned. Now this, I don't know that I can teach this, right? I said before, when he just sounded like he was uninformed and didn't have the vernacular, that I could have taught to somebody. When he just doesn't know his fucking business, you know, listen, dude, I'm not going to be your CEO, right? And so I don't want to work for somebody who's just not going to be good enough to generate the amount of income that it needs to pay the commitment that you made to me. And so for sure, by the time we're at this point in the conversation, I remember thinking, I got to get out of here. And I remember thinking, I need more information. Knowing myself the way I do, I probably was thinking I need more information here. As I recall the way it all played out, it wasn't until I started getting feedback from others, and we'll talk about that in other episodes, that I started getting feedback from others until I thought that, you know, okay, I have no choice but to back away. At this point, I'm probably starting to suspect I should back away.
Lies when others didn't. I think our supply chain is pretty long, and I think we are pretty thoughtful around our purchasing. So, you know, while I can't turn the page and say, look, that chapter of life is over.
In fact, that chapter of life is over. Interestingly enough, I forgot that I didn't plan on cutting you off so often, Charles, but I forgot that you said that. So yeah, let me tell you what I mentioned the Kelly Moore employees before. Let me tell you what I knew about Kelly Moore, what I know about Kelly Moore, having done some investigation and having spoken with a large number of employees and having really taken a study of their operations and organizations, is the day before he got there, they were an outstanding company despite some challenges in their leadership, which had made a lot of mistakes that cost the company a lot of money. And otherwise, they seemed to be an extremely efficient operator. They seemed to be very well connected to their communities, to their clientele. All of that existed for 78 years or whatever. And that's what he's talking about. He's about to say he's closing the book, his implication is we're going to close the book on what tragedy happened before, which of course was no tragedy. It was the success of thousands of families, hundreds of families, thousands of families over decades and decades. That's what you destroyed, Charles Gassenheimer, when you close the book. That's what you're talking about right here. You're going to close the book. I have a lot of people reaching out to me, asking a lot of questions. I'm trying to decide how, if at all, I want to address that with some sort of content or what have you. But until then, probably amongst the most common I get is from people wondering why I'm saying things that seem so bold. They're not. I assure you, I'm holding back. I think far more is to come of this story. But they see them and they text me and they say, aren't you concerned about being so bold in some of your reporting? And the answer is no, because I knew that this moment of publication was coming. I knew that I had the video evidence to back up the title. And so now that I'm seeing it with you guys, this part for sure, for the first time, we're 12 minutes and change, almost 13 minutes in. This part for sure, I don't recall seeing, except for the fact that I know I watched the whole thing once early in this experience. And so, wow. All right, let's keep going, Chucky.
I think we all know that that there's going to continue to, there's always challenges. There's always the next challenge just around the corner for all of us. But we do feel like we can provide on a cost per gallon basis, paint at equivalent price to the big players, but give you that extra high touch finish and give you that guaranteed in stock notion of being able to deliver the paint.
What a fucking absurdity that statement was at that time. And back to the topic of why I feel comfortable saying what I say, I have seen the evidence and have spoken to enough people that have told me that at the time he said that, he knew that that was not his plan. And in fact, I found out recently that they stopped producing paint in July. What absurdity.